Hey, what's going on? I hope you are well. Hope you've had a good week so far. I've got a brilliant episode for you today that I loved recording, chatting to Sky Nicholas, who is a contemporary artist and a really, really cool dude. He's got an amazing brain for this space. He's been in it a long time as well. So I think this is probably the most value-packed episode that we've ever done, so I know you're really going to love it. I'll tell you a bit more about Sky in just a second, but I also wanted to say thank you because we made it into the new shows for the technology section on Apple this week, which was very cool. So thank you if you've been supporting the show so far, and if you're new, welcome along. This episode is called How to Spot Value in the NFT Space and Metaverse with Sky Nicholas. Now, Sky would describe himself as a contemporary artist exploring the digital medium and is an active member of the NFT community. His works have been collected by esteemed collectors in the space, and he continues to create works that are highly unique, focusing on concept and execution. So he's a cool guy. We talk about loads of stuff, a little bit about his fine art background to begin with, and then into NFTs, the space at the minute, how to kind of assess value in these projects, where he thinks it's all going. He's got some really unique perspectives, some great kind of tips and knowledge to give. So yeah, it's a longer one. It's about 40, 50 minutes. So grab a cup of tea or a beer or whatever you're drinking. Is sit back, relax, and enjoy this one. As always, nothing we talk about in this show is financial advice. Always do your own research. That's just being smart. I've popped some chapter headings in the show notes as well if you want to navigate through, along with all of Sky's links and some links to the projects we talk about in this episode as well. So without further ado, let's dive into it. Sky, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Luke. Great pleasure to be here.
Good stuff. All right. So, I'm excited to have you on because you are deep in this space. You've got a, you know, interesting artistic background as well. So, we're going to have a good chat. It's going to be awesome. But for anyone listening who doesn't know you yet, do you want to just tell us your story a little bit, you know, how you got to this point and how you got involved with the whole NFT space?
Yeah. So I come from a traditional fine art background, based in New York. I've had exhibitions in fine art in many different countries, some of which have been supported by luminaries in contemporary art, such as Jay Joplin. For those who are familiar with Jay Joplin, he was instrumental in the career of Damien Hirst, as well as legendary curator Norman Rosenthal. So they've supported my exhibitions, and that's pretty much like as far as fine art goes. Exhibited at the Dallas Contemporary Art Museum pre-COVID, and funny enough, so this is like a quick sort of anecdote, hearing about NFTs. I actually heard NFTs from comedian Tim Dillon. He's an American comedian. He has a podcast. And I was invited to Clubhouse by a friend. I heard Tim talk about NFTs. And I was just, you know, it began as a curiosity. And so as I dug deeper, yeah, I was just pretty much involved in the early Clubhouse days and listening to all the people talk about NFTs, and just people were just starting to tokenize their art. So that really intrigued me. And so I just created my Genesis series, which sold to legendary collector, NFT collector, Crypto 888. Shout out to 888. And it's funny, you know, like as you go deep into the community, you find out like everybody's so interconnected. And one really wonderful thing that happened sort of like months later, as sort of like I was getting my foot sort of like established in the space, a fellow artist from the School of Fine Arts in the Philippines reached out to me and said, oh wow, so you're the one behind this work, and just wanted to let you know that we actually studied, you know, my class and I actually studied your fine art work when I was a student and all that. And so it's just sort of cascaded into these wonderful events, and here we are.
Awesome. That's a cool story. That's amazing. People are studying your art. Very cool. And it's so much part of it, and we're going to talk about it, but there's a real community in this space, and it's unlocked, like, for artists being able to tokenize, monetize their work in a different way. It's really exciting. It's an exciting time to find it, if you're coming to it new, if you're listening and you're relatively new. It's super early and it's super exciting, and
absolutely,
yeah, so it's a good thing to witness. That's cool. I think for a lot of people who are, you know, have moved into this space, they might be relatively new and have been brought in by, you know, a lot of these mainstream headlines, right? So NBA Top Shot, the big collectibles,
yeah,
NFT, you know, game almost, or yeah, collectible series. And then obviously there's the headlines of, you know, Beeple and the big auctions, the 69 million Bored Apes, all that sort of stuff. All that stuff is cool and exciting, but what are you kind of focused on here? Because obviously you're an NFT OG, so what's your kind of wisdom on where this space is at the minute, and, you know, the opportunities, but also what are you looking at, what are you kind of focusing on?
You mentioned a lot of, you know, basically those are like collectibles, like all the NBA Top Shots and all that. And since we're speaking about the community, maybe we could, you know, I could sort of like for those who aren't really like just getting their feet wet and just kind of like browsing around, there's a lot of like really cool projects. Projects are pretty hot right now, from the Bored Apes to, of course, the OG are the CryptoPunks, and we've seen them go for crazy prices on auction. I must say, for anybody who's like sort of interested in just kind of like checking things out, checking out projects, there's so many projects. Like this week or the previous week, we had the Cool Cats. And so there's a lot of these are avatar projects. So pretty much they're kind of like collectibles, in which usually there's like a, let's say, a collection of 10,000 characters, and all these characters have different traits and rarities. You know, just like any collectible, there are the rare ones that are much sought after, and those go fetch for very high prices, and there's trading going on. So, and one must remember that a lot of the people driving up these prices, but what I mean is not driving up, but like really buying it up at crazy prices, are whether former or into financial trading. You know, these are traders who are used in playing in the stock market and all that. So in a way, it's a fun way for them to participate and, you know, make a bit of ease and all that. And one of the projects that I really enjoy and encourage people to check out are the Crypto Baby Punks.
I've seen them recently. Yeah, they're picking up a bit of chat, aren't they?
So the Crypto Baby Punks is, although they are not directly connected to Larva Labs. Larva Labs is the studio responsible for creating the OG Punks, which came out in 2017. The Crypto Baby Punks, it's a great community. I think the driving force behind a lot of these projects is definitely community. Like they have I think of all the projects, they have this like really bustling Discord, and everybody is always very excited and everything. And it's good to note that the Baby Punks project has a lot of ties with big legit studios such as Artifact. If you've heard of Artifact Studios, they make the wearables and all that. So Samuel Cardillo and Artifact Studios, they just tweeted out today that they are collaborating. I mean, imagine Artifact Studios is collaborating on a project to do with the Baby Punks. So they're expanding the Baby Punks. The Babyverse, they call it. So it's either an application or a video game. They already have an application that traces, like if you buy a Baby Punk, you could trace its parental lineage to its parents.
Yeah, this stuff's being starting to be built in, isn't it? All this kind of like digital DNA to these projects, which is so exciting. Yeah, interesting.
It's so exciting. And to think that it actually, you know, this is a well thought of project. It's not just okay, so we just have characters and release it to the wild and see how much it fetches for. No, this is a very what I find so interesting is it was very well thought out, and it really relates to the original punks. And I'm always sort of like a proponent of this, and I always tell people openly. I say, you know, as a business move, you know, as somebody who's been into entrepreneurial projects in the past, I think it would be such a power move for Larva Labs to acquire the Baby Punks project.
Yeah, because, for sure.
Yeah, because for one, you know, it's a big win because for one, the groundwork, sort of the framework, everything is already built. So basically, and this would make huge headlines because it would be the first acquisition in the NFT space. No, so I think all of that is just sort of like a big win for everyone. So in terms of projects, I would say look around, but I think Baby Punks is one of the most fun because they're still affordable anyway. Mm-hmm. I think the floor is at 0.20 right now. It's in between 0.20 and 0.60, And that's when you see a project is really kind of like has a lot of value, because you don't see huge numbers being pumped every week. And I think it's like a steady rise. And the fact that a lot of big collectors, like all the a lot of punks like Beanie and the rest of the, other OG punks and collectors like Crypto888 have baby punks themselves. So yeah, drives up the value for these baby punks.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because one thing that I wanted to ask you with, this whole array of projects, right from the, amazing digital art which came first and some of the amazing stuff that you're doing, and then, through to collectibles around sort of the same similar time, and then, projects with different utility as well. So then we've seen something like Zed Run, where we're like it's got this digital DNA with the horses that you can breed and, have your own NFTs, and then through to something like Axie Infinity, which is a whole, game where the characters in it are NFTs themselves, but it's all this development, and then there's so many, I don't want to say copies, but obviously Bored Apes was probably the project that had the model for the 10,000, unique NFTs first, and then lots of other projects have kind of followed that model. So what do you look for when you're looking for value in a project? And you mentioned some of it with what you were just saying, but whether that is an individual artist that's maybe up and coming that you want to support, or whether it is a collectible or project or a game project, what are the kind of key things that you go, oh, actually, this means it probably has got value and that's what I should focus on?
That's a great question. I think the most important thing, the word in this is commitment. I think if a group or individual shows commitment, then the work, because I always think that you'll be able to see whether a project, whether the devs or the creator, even if it's an artist, like for me, the work is never done and everything is in a constant state of development. And so if you see that they're always working on something, and that's what I mean by like some projects just drop the project after everybody's collected, then it's done. And they just see how the market kind of dictates the prices and all that. But pretty much it's like you collected a JPEG, right? But I feel like those who continuously provide sort of like provide value in such a way that the project is never done. They're always releasing exciting things related to the project. That's when you show some kind of passion and dedication. And I think that's where commitment lies. And I think that's the driving force for any, that's a metric for measuring any kind of value in any work. So just commitment.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that kind of builds into community, doesn't it? And everyone around that project. And I think, not to focus too much on Bored Apes, but it's a good model for that because they've done something genius where they've given away, if you own the ape, you own the rights to your ape, so you can build other brands off the back of it. And then that lifts everyone up, right? And the whole project, and no doubt there'll probably be streetwear elements to it and it's physical merch and all these things. So I guess it just continues to have value because it can go in so many different directions and everyone wants it to do well. So yeah, that's cool. Let's talk about a show that you were involved with, because the second stage is kind of these shows that are happening within the actual metaverse, right? So the inside these virtual worlds, and Amalgamation, which was a show that you were involved with, was in Crypto Voxels. And this is like the next sort of phase and development and interesting way of experiencing digital art and NFTs. So yeah, tell us about that show, kind of how it went down, and what was your experience of it all?
So Amalgamation 2021 is sort of like the first. It was conceived by Noah Becker. Noah Becker of White Hat Magazine is a contemporary, fine art magazine. And Noah has also come into the NFT space, just like me, coming from a fine art background. And basically, he is also a curator. So he partnered up with Accelerate Art, and Accelerate Art was co-founded by Claire Silver, who was one of the OG punks. And so she had this. She's done several sort of like exhibition events in Crypto Voxels. And so Noah approached Accelerate Art. And and so they just decided to have the very first. This was kind of like the big kind of exhibition of the summer. So this will be an ongoing thing. So they chose like 36 artists, and also it was in partnership with another fun new platform called Chainsaw. So it's the URL is chainsaw.fun. I believe it. Chainsaw was founded by, I forget. I'm sorry, I forget his name, but like he was he's pretty much, I think, the cousin. He's related to the original creator of Pepe the Frog.
Oh,
So a
yes.
lot of, yeah, so a lot of the artists featured in Chainsaw, it's more of, it's like a carefully kind of chosen roster in which it's very, if you compare it to music, it's sort of like an indie label, very eclectic kind of choice of artists in that sort of roster. So everybody just kind of got together and, we had it in Crypto Voxels. A lot of people were new to it, and each artist got, sort of the time to speak, and it was sort of like a an opening. So you had many people in Crypto Voxels in the gallery, sort of virtual gallery space, a 3-floor gallery that was built specifically for the event, and the crowd would sort of move from one artwork to another. And what's great about this, I think, the difference between a virtual setting and IRL is that I think there seems to be more artist interaction, because I mean, to be honest, a lot of artists aren't very keen on public speaking. A lot of them are very shy, openly, and all that. Even though, like, sometimes they might be like art giants and all that, they're not comfortable. Not everyone is comfortable publicly speaking. So I think that's one great thing about these virtual spaces, is that you can kind of like open up and be more intimate in learning about an artist's work that you wouldn't be able to do in a IRL setting. But of course, one cannot compare an IRL show, especially if, like, if the work is large scale, you want to see these, huge physical works. You can't compare that to a IRL show. But I think we just have to see how the metaverse or this virtual tech evolves over time, because yeah, I mean, these people are laying down the foundations and opportunities for promoting more artists and just exploring this whole new environment in this medium.
Yeah, for sure. Like it's so fascinating, and that's an interesting point I'd not really thought of about. Yeah, like a lot of artists and creatives or anyone in general might not be so confident
Yeah.
to chat in real life, but virtually that's kind of a cool sort of bonus thing that I hadn't considered. But yeah, I mean, like literally the sort of new wave is being built as it's happening, right? So it's like building the plane as it's flying type thing. We're working out what's going
Exactly.
on. In real time, so it's so interesting. But and to an observer who's maybe outside of this world, at first glance, you look at some of these worlds like Crypto Voxels and Decentraland, and the graphics or whatever don't necessarily compare to the level of stuff that is out there in terms of gaming. But obviously, the fundamentals are so different that they're decentralized worlds, and everyone can come and meet together, and these things are happening. So it is very different, but. Where do you see that? Those exhibitions. So I was reading about a company, Boson or Protocol, who have bought $700,000 worth of land in Decentraland, who are building a shop,
Parcels.
parcels, right? Yeah,
Yeah.
who are building a
Yeah.
shopping mall. And not only were they saying that you could experience, buying stuff for your avatar in the shopping mall virtually, but you could, maybe go into a shop and then have an experience around the say it's a winter jacket, you then get, beamed up Mount Everest and chat to the designer or whatever in real time. So there's these kind of like whole nother level of experience you could have with art
Yeah.
exhibition shows in the virtual world that's more than less than just maybe an avatar looking at a digital piece. So yeah, do you have any inclination of where those exhibitions
Yeah.
might go in the future, do you think?
Yeah. Well, kind of just back to your point about these experiences. No, I just wanted to kind of expand on that,
Yeah, of
because
course.
I think it's an interesting conversation. One thing I also do, besides, being a fine artist, I do creative direction, and I've worked with some creative agencies that work with fine fashion, high fashion brands and labels. I actually helped develop some products for YSL, for Saint Laurent,
Oh, amazing.
and yeah, and I pretty much, like, this was like a couple of years ago, and I kind of already saw that the integration to digital was coming. And so, a lot of this is really exciting, because I feel that a lot of people will, like, I feel like this is the new underground, like when it comes to subcultures, right? So, in the 90s, everybody kind of dreamed of, like, what would the virtual world be? Well, this is it,
Yeah,
right? So
it's
we are
happening.
now seeing it's happening. So, for example, I'll give you an example. Like, there are many other events happening right now in crypto voxels in Decentraland that not many of us know about. Like, for example, a friend of mine, Matthew Michaud, who is he has a background in the music industry, and he has a roster of rappers and DJs. He actually is spearheading several DJ and art events in both crypto voxels in Decentraland. He actually DJed for the launch of the Deadheads. There was a
Oh,
recent
very
project
cool.
called it.
Okay.
Right. And in that event, I believe at one floor there was 500, and the entire event had the kind of like a, the counter at one point he said was close to 1,000.
That's
A
cool, isn't
thousand
it?
people were in it. And Gary Vee was in it as well, you know?
Yeah,
So you had
that's
like some.
it's like social media to another level, isn't it? Because you're hanging out with all these people who
Exactly.
you're influential and you find exciting in their work. And especially now, it's like the access
Yeah.
to people is great because it's early, so people are all chatting and developing
Yeah.
together. So it's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah.
So it's a bunch. It's curiosity. It's real time interaction. Clubhouse is pretty much sort of been a savior for a lot of people during COVID because you need those sort of like vocal, those interactions and speaking with people. But Crypto Voxels puts it on another, adds another layer to the experience in which you have sort of like, yeah, you're play, it's sort of like a video game thing where you're seeing yourself interact with all these other people. And so, yeah, all of this is just laying the foundation and groundwork for all kinds of innovative events. And I think as these go on, a lot of brands and a lot of, big companies will be interested, and I'm sure, we're all just contributing to this movement, whether we know it or not, right? Just as a participant, right? It's kind of like, how clubs are formed, youth culture and all that. All of this happens because a huge group of people are into it and everybody's just participating. And basically, yeah, we're seeing everything form in real time, and these will be kind of seen as the pioneers of this new culture. I think it's more, to me, it's more interesting what culture is forming, what subcultures are forming, and those will be the pioneers years from now.
Yeah, and it's kind of remapping everything, isn't it? Because there was previously, if you really wanted to, whether it's displaying art or whether it's being popular in a certain community, maybe there'd have been gatekeepers at the top of these, auction houses or TV channels or whatever. But now these communities, which have been online for a long time, but they are, really having impact. And it's kind of inevitable now, right? Like you see, I always think about social media and obviously Instagram is amazing in its own right. But you look at something like Crypto Voxels and the experience is so much cooler and better than scrolling through a 2D page. That's going to look old pretty soon, isn't it? That'll be all just sat for hours of an evening and just scrolled through like 2D stuff and,
scrolling through your Instagram feed, isn't it?
Yeah. Is that it's gonna seem
Like, I
like
mean,
mad.
that's what it is, right? Like, we're so used to like all these, like to us, we've been so conditioned to basically use these social media apps and all that for over a decade. And it's like now we're seeing like, oh, well, maybe that's done. Maybe the scrolling the feed is done.
Yeah.
And now we're more into kind of like think about it, right? So we our phones, our mobile devices are extensions of us. They're pretty much an extra appendage. And it's like now, like who knows? Maybe we feel unnatural if we're not, let's say, let me check my parcel, a CryptoVox, see what's hanging out or
Yeah.
whatever. Even if you're outside, it's like sometimes you feel like people feel like they have to be in Twitter spaces or Clubhouse because they feel it's almost like an interactive podcast with more people, kind of.
Yeah,
And
yeah, yeah.
I'm really, yeah.
It's fascinating. And even like I've had it with friends, in VR and stuff where previously maybe we would have wanted to watch a TV show at a certain time, but there was something that was
Yeah.
revealed in this game that was live, and we all actually turned up to the game, as avatars to see what was happening in real time in the game. And that's the same with events in Crypto Voxels or whatever. It's really sort of changing everything. And in the same way as, we all have a profile photo and a bio and stuff, it's
Right.
like avatars are going to turn into that, aren't they? A digital way of us to express ourselves with all wearables and everything. It seems really inevitable at this point. It's an interesting point, because up until maybe, I don't know, a couple of years ago, it was all very, very early days. And now it's like, this is happening, and it's happening quick, right?
Yeah. Identity is very interesting, I think. Sort of like how, you know, in a way, I was speaking to a couple of punks, and they brought up this sort of subject of identity, online identity. Like, for example, Claire Silver was talking about that for a while, like how it seems like her online identity is sort of like overtaking her IRL identity, you know? And I'm sure that's kind of like, yeah, like what you were kind of talking about, where like you and your friends kind of have this kind of like avatar in which you're known for, and your virtual life is completely different from like your physical, your IRL life.
Yeah, 100%. And the opportunities and things you can do are just on a different plane, aren't they? It's all very interesting. Oh, you've maybe answered this in some form already, but what would you say for people who are coming into the NFT space or working in it, and you're, you know, OG involved in it, what do you think is something that people aren't paying attention to at the minute that is really about to erupt or is really exciting? Maybe that is events in Crypto Voxel, or is there anything else that you're like, people haven't quite clocked onto this year?
Yeah, I would like to see, and I love this question, because I think a lot of people are too focused on, like, let's say, Crypto Voxel's events, or like, you know, it's still kind of like, we're still looking at NFTs in terms of like a purchase, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of like ownership or something. But what I would really like to see, and I feel like this is the key to mass integration and mass adoption, is the practical use of NFTs. And that's something that I never really heard from people talking about in Clubhouse. I mean, a few people, but I would like to see the practical use of NFTs in case uses. For example, I really would like to see the tokenization of historical artifacts and archiving.
That's cool.
Because I feel like, imagine, like, say, you know, if you, because you have a lot of these, like, let's say the Smithsonian, you know, they keep track of a lot of artifacts or just historical landmarks that are kind of, you know, over time will disappear. Imagine if we had the entire historical record in blockchain. So pretty much it's like in the future, you can have, like, let's say if you go to a museum generations from now, you have holograms or a virtual experience in VR of, like, let's say a place that no longer exists, but the fact that it's been tokenized.
Interesting.
Yeah, but the fact that it's been tokenized means that it's sort of like the spirit of the place or the object saying that it really existed, because at this time and at this place, this was tokenized and therefore it is real. So imagine if we had tokenized everything in history. And like showing, this is the tokenization of the Colosseum of Rome, you know? I mean, things like that, right? So, because I come from a country that has so many indigenous cultures, and I feel a lot of, like, let's say the art is slowly vanishing. And I would like to kind of like, I challenge a lot of these tech companies and people in NFTs to kind of look into other uses, like preservation, like say a basket weaver who's been doing basket weaving for generations. Like, if you could sort of tokenize that, the way on this art was created and all that, you know, to sort of like keep it in terms of like archiving and for generations to come to enjoy it. So with that, I think in terms of fine art, in terms of collecting fine art, I think for those of you who, you know, who often check out Netflix, there's a great show called Made You Look. It's a documentary which shows all the forgery going on in the fine art world. Forgery is a big art for, you know, paintings and sculpture forgeries are a big deal in fine art. And a lot of people have been duped because of it. And I feel if we were to implement tokenization of artworks, like, let's say, imagine if on auction, like, let's say Christie's or Bonham's was auctioning off a Picasso one evening, and as soon as the hammer was set down and the piece has been sold, immediately would sort of have like a tokenization, you know, before it goes straight into the person's, you know, whether it's delivered to the person's home or to the person's collection facility, It would be tokenized, and therefore all the metadata would go into that token, and that would solve a lot of the provenance issues. Because to this day, a lot of fine art is still kept, it's tracked by paper, and we know paper can be, fiddled with and basically edited, and you could put a lot of like false data into it, and this would give it provenance issues. Another thing, if we were to go to, all the hypebeasts out there. If we were to go into streetwear and basically fashion luxury products, let's say you had an Hermes bag, okay? Like I used to deal in the vintage collecting business several years ago. I used to collect a lot of vintage clothing and t-shirts and all that, concert t-shirts to be specific. But like, let's say you had an Hermes bag that had like, that was worth $50,000, and basically the value of it accrues over time. Of course, because not everybody can afford an Hermes bag. But imagine if in the future you would need to have whatever fashion object or asset you have, you would need to have it tokenized, because it would be almost impossible to sell it to this secondary market if it didn't have that NFT connected to it. Because you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like the proof of authentication.
Yeah, blockchain is so interesting on the creative end of stuff, but then also just on the proof of
The
scarcity
practical
and the
use.
practical use, right? It's like another
Yes.
thing that it also solves essentially. So that's interesting for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like you were saying as well, like a lot of people, I guess everyone is focusing on the future and where this is all going, which is definitely an amazing thing. But then also, that's a really interesting point about preservation of stuff, and we don't want to, lose context for amazing stuff that's been created now or has done in the past. So actually, to tokenize that
Yeah.
and make it last forever is another cool aspect of it all.
Yeah, because I think the more we have practical uses, the more we have mass adoption. And I think that's the key for this to like explode exponentially, because we're still a very small community. A lot of people are still coming in they're still very curious, and they're still not so sold on it, because at the moment, we're just experimenting with collectibles and art, and that's pretty much it. But once we go beyond that, I feel that this will be, revolutionary and life-changing.
Yeah, for sure. And it becomes kind of necessary as well, doesn't it? It's like you
It
need to
becomes
have it.
necessary. Yeah. Like one interesting thing, I was having a conversation with a friend recently. Like, roadblocks,
Yes.
like for example, roadblocks, like it might be an inaccurate data, but somebody was like saying that any kid under the age of 16 in the US, in the United States, has somewhat interacted or played Roblox. 50% of kids under the age of 16. That is a huge number to think, like 50%, but think about it, right? Like, who has not heard about Roblox if you're a kid, right? And the point is, and this is the interesting point, is that when you think about it, that entire generation who grew up on Roblox, that is where they congregate. That's where they, I mean, I have nephews and nieces who basically hung out with their friends during COVID playing Roblox. And so think about it. They're already in the mindset of being future investors and speculators, because like my niece, she calls, like she says, oh, these are my assets. I have this sword, I have this gun, whatever. These are my assets, and this is how much this is worth.
That's crazy and cool, isn't it? It's amazing they have that concept and it's so native to them. That's what
Yes.
they've grown up on, so it's
It's
built in from
yes.
day one, really, isn't it?
It's so native to them, and they're already in their mind without even knowing, they already have the fundamentals of accumulating wealth and assets. So imagine, and this is the cool thing, like my friend and I were talking about, this idea that generation and Roblox, they probably know kind of like what kind of advantage they have if they were to fully integrate, that all of that entire platform, that entire community into blockchain, and opening it up to, I don't know, metaverse stuff, like other projects and all that, because that generation is primed for NFTs.
Yeah, and that's why I think we're sitting in such an interesting time and such an opportunity that we're, most people coming into this space are of an age where they both have seen the internet arrive, but also can see, like you say, the next generation coming through who are native to it, but might be in a position to actually execute stuff, right? So we're at a really
Yes.
kind of crucial, cool point. And to a point that you said there as well, like I read a stat that I think Roblox has 37 million users a day, and this year 9.8 million people watched the Oscars. Like they have four times more users engaged in a real virtual world than people watch the Oscars. It's just a crazy stat, isn't it? Like the world is changing and it's going that way. So it's,
the world is changing.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you on that point a little bit as well. I mean, there's suddenly, slowly, but the brands who are switching onto it, there's some big players that are coming into the space now. They've obviously seen the opportunities, and I no doubt will go through some kind of boom and bust cycles, and a lot of projects, you know, will go to zero, but like you say, those ones that are committed are will last, you know, the whole way. But things recently that I've noticed that sort of took me by surprise a little bit, there's Wenu, which is seems to be like an NFT project that Beeple's involved with, where it's big brands are creating official collections. So Wimbledon, the tennis grand slam in the UK, did a first release there, and I looked at it, I don't know if other people saw this, but it was just the video moments, but there was no more. There was some utility in that. I think the top end one, you got to play half an hour of tennis with Andy Murray at Wimbledon, which was very cool, but it was different from something like Top Shot collectible, even in terms of how it was presented. It was just the video there, so I was like, I can see what's happening, but I didn't get overly excited about that. And but then there's also projects like Genies, which are really pushing avatars in the music space, especially pop music. So Justin Bieber and Cardi B and all these kind of mainstream artists, it seem like they're about to release wearable collections. So are you excited about those big players coming in, or does it make you nervous that you know the grassroots communities are gonna, I don't know, have to fight for space, or is there space for everyone and that's just how it develops?
That's a really good question, and it really depends, I think, depends on one's perspective, right? Because in the big picture, I think that the more platforms there are, the more competition that, you know, the more competition there is. And I think competition drives innovation.
Cool. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I think in the big picture, right? That we've seen so far, I mean, the NFT community by scale is still relatively small. And I think, like, for example, you know, it's kind of nice because, like, for example, you know, Beanie and his Punks comics and all that, you know, you have these entrepreneurial sort of like projects happening. And I think it has its own niche. Everything has its own niche, I believe. Like there's always something for someone. So even though you have Beeple, I mean, it only makes sense that Beeple is like partnering up with other individuals, like creating this huge platform and all that. And I think the more platforms they are, the more we are closer to mainstream adoption, because, you know, it really has to get out there. It has to get non-NFT people involved, or even slightly curious. You know, that's where we are. We're trying to get more people to participate. And I think this is good. At the moment, though, on the other side, the NFT community, the community's attitude with big players coming in, sometimes it's almost very, suspicious because they may see it as a cash grab. Like, for example, when celebrities come in, like, you know, Snoop Dogg releases his dog coin or whatever. Uh-huh. And we've seen recently, and, you know, I'm not bad mouthing. It's not a bad thing. All I'm saying is that a lot of these are, they kind of come in and they sort of just cash out kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, that's what celebrities and influencers do. You know, they get on a project. Once a project is done and all that. And that's where I go back to my original point of commitment, right? I think those who are truly committed to providing value and enjoying the space because they understand the fundamentals and the potential of NFTs and adding to that potential. I think those are the projects that are going to have lasting power.
Yeah, I think that's always the key thing, isn't it? And I think as you spend more time around, you know, the community, whether it's on Twitter or seeing the projects that drop, you begin to get a sort of sixth sense of what is doing well and has long-term value, and you can kind of spot maybe some of these cash grabs, which probably are inevitable.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's inevitable.
Yeah, fair. Cool. All right, I wanted to ask you as well, like, what are you working on right now? What can we get excited about, you know, your work individually, and also what would you love to create? What's kind of on your mind for doing next?
Yeah. So I completed the world's first yacht art series and yacht art collection. So for people who aren't familiar, yachts are made by Yacht Labs. So what a yacht is it is a combination or a string of emojis. So Yacht is actually selling, you are able to buy the exclusive rights to a combination of emojis. Like, for example, my emoji, which points to my website, my artist website, is devil fire, devil fire. So if you put so that's like a that's just like a fun URL, right? So this is another interesting thing that people are doing in the metaverse, like ownership of emojis. Who would have thought? Like, for example, a Crypto888 owns the sparkle emoji, and that's like, you could imagine, this is crazy because this is like URLs, right? So Yacht Labs has made it possible that you have the exclusive rights of a specific emoji in which you can point it to anything online, whether it's a web page or a downloadable asset. And that person has exclusive use of that emoji as a URL forever. There's no, once you purchase it, it's yours. There's no, you don't have to, you don't have to repurchase the rights each year. There are no renewal fees. It's just, that's it. It's a one-time purchase. And think
How
about
have
it,
they done
right?
that then? If they, because of an emoji is like a universal thing, right, that nobody owns, so it's interesting.
Right, but they've done it in such a way that you are able to purchase the rights to the use of the emoji. In terms of pointing it, for now, they're using it as URLs or domains. So these are emoji domains. So yeah, I encourage people to check it out because it's really interesting. Because to our early kind of conversation topic earlier, we were talking about identity, right? All these online identities and how which we identify each other are kind of just forming. An avatar is just one layer of it, right? So if we look at our credit cards, we have our name and all that. Imagine if, like, in the future, certain emojis identify us. It's like we're linked to specific emojis. I think that's kind of like another interesting culture that's being built around yachts, is that there are people who are very much tied and linked to specific emojis. So what I did was, I pretty much took that technology and I created kind of like the first, because everybody's just kind of using it in a fun way to point to a domain, but nobody's really used it in a creative way to implement or to employ it as part of an integral part of the artwork. So I made some autobiographical works on SuperRare, complemented by art editions on Known Origin. So you could check it out on SuperRare or Known Origin. So basically, what I did was for the SuperRare one of ones, they're little vignettes in which I share kind of like my childhood, and each work. So it's kind of like you hear me giving a short story, you hear my voice, and then you see some photos of, childhood photographs. And then there's a string of those emojis. And when you visit that string of emojis, it takes you to a very specific Google Maps location in which the story took place. So there's more of a storytelling layer. I made it such that I used the yacht technology to give another storytelling layer to the artwork, so you can explore the locale in which the story took place.
That's so cool. I love how you've brought all those things
Yeah,
together because it's like
together, right.
crossing this the whole new realm of digital ownership and identity and
Right.
then bringing it back to where it kind of all started, I guess, in that example. So yeah, that's very cool. It kind of hurts the brain to think about all those like elements coming together, but it's in a good way. It's very cool. Yeah, I love that.
Like, for example, in the Known Origin editions, right? Like, so the Known Origin editions, like, it's a total of 50, but I've only released 25, and they're pretty good collectibles because they only cost like 0.10 to 0.14 ETH. And like, for example, number three is a crayon. It's like this fun crayon. So basically, if you go to the emoji, if you click on the yacht link, it takes you to a page where there's like fine art. It's like a fine art coloring book in which you can download sheets of famous paintings, but you could color it in with a crayon.
That's
And like,
cool.
yeah, and then number 25 is a letter in which you can actually download an analog letter that I actually typed out and wrote out, has my signature, and it just says, you know, when this artwork was purchased at this date, it was at 0.14 ETH. So it's kind of like all these fun things because, like, the Known Origin series is complementing the Super Rare story because it's almost like each artwork is a fragment of my consciousness. Each artwork is a fragment of my personality, right? So it's just a bunch of little things about me. I'm telling a story in bits and pieces and just using yachts as like the technology to kind of bridge it all together. So that's it. I mean, yeah, so like to your, you know, so like you were saying, basically, you know, my the signature, you know, for what I would like people to know is like the signature, you know, Sky Nicholas aesthetic, if there is any, is I basically really I really pay attention to a strong concept behind the work. I really focus on the concept and just a simplistic execution, you know, and it's like it's a very well thought out concept, very thoughtful and just a simple execution, you know.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that is, you know, that separates it from so much stuff that's going on at the minute. There's so much built into that, which you know is so deeper than a lot of projects that
Yeah,
we
because
might have.
most people are, yeah, most people, I think, and I think that's the predominant kind of style in NFT art is that we're conditioned to look out, and I personally call it sugar. I just call it sugar because I think we're conditioned to be drawn to something visually. And I think that's so limiting because like, oh, look at that 3D thing, you know, it's like caught my attention. And I feel it's almost like a sugary, it's like fast food. It's like a sugary
Yeah, it's
drug,
like
you
eating
know?
snacks all day rather than having a full, actual, healthy, nutritious meal where there's
Right,
more to
right.
it, right? Yeah, I see.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's cool. Quickly, let's talk about future art as well, because this sounds like a cool event that's happening that's kind of
Yes.
in the physical world but combines all these things they've talked about, loads of cool people involved as well. So, yeah, tell us quickly about that.
Yeah, Future Art is happening in Sydney on August 6th, and it's actually the first huge NFT event. If you look at if you follow the Future Art Twitter, shout out to Future Art. They actually have an amazing promo video that kind of gives you an overview of the event. It's a huge event, so basically it's a kind of a laser light kind of show. You'll see a lot of images being projected onto the Sydney Opera House. I mean, this is a landmark. This is
That's
insane, right?
crazy,
It's
right?
almost
Yeah.
like, yeah, it's like, can you imagine, like, let's say, images being projected onto the London Bridge or the
Yeah.
Statue of Liberty. I mean, this is how huge this event is. And pretty much the founders, Sats Moon and David Good, basically put this together. And they're mixing, what's interesting is like, it's almost like an EDM festival kind of component to it, in which, you know, you'll have a lot of people. You know, there'd be an exhibit checking out NFT artworks, but at the same time, there's a festive mood, right, in which the city will be participating. So it's kind of like, think about it as like a NFT exhibit slash, you know, EDM festival slash light show, and the whole kind of Sydney is buzzing towards this. And yeah, so I was asked to participate as one of the artists, and I'll be debuting some new works, which I will be minting on Super Rare soon, and you'll be able to see it IRL and that really fun event.
Yeah, love it. Just sounds ridiculously fun and quality. So yeah, keep an eye out
Yeah.
for that as well. That's very cool. All right, well we'll begin to wrap up because I know you've got to go as well. But it's yeah been awesome conversation. So thank you so much. The final thing I wanted to ask was you know for I know some of my audience are kind of beginning to go down the rabbit hole of this space and there's a lot to kind of process. But is there somewhere good that you would recommend to start or you know what should someone who's kind of new to this space sort of be looking for. We've mentioned it a bit, but do you have any advice as like a NFT OG and someone who's, you
Yeah.
know, really adding value in the space?
I think, you know, first and foremost, I think, you know, have fun in the space, you know, spread your creative wings because it's an inviting and supportive community, you know, that I must say, for anyone, you know, if you especially, you know, start a Twitter, follow a lot of people, a lot of artists, a lot of projects, and you will see that it's a community that encourages people to explore and create. But I think while enjoying yourself, also learn to manage expectations. This has become an extremely saturated space, in terms of, like, the amount of artwork that is pouring out there. So, I think it would be wise to focus on your craft and keep growing and observe. Just observe, while you're focusing on creating your own work, observe sort of like what's going on, and also participate. Participation is very important. There are a lot of Twitter space rooms going on. I'd say listen in, get to know the people there, get to make some friends, because those are the people that will be supporting your work eventually. And it's important to be part of that movement. So Twitter space is a good resource for community engagement. And so it's always good to be plugged in, and information, as always, will be your most valuable asset. So just keep in mind that the more you know, the more you interact, the most likely you will enjoy some kind of future success in the space.
Yeah, that's really good, really solid advice. I think definitely, yeah, to get involved, create if you are a creator, or interact if you want to learn more and listen, learn, and quite soon it sort of all falls into place. And yeah, it's a lot of fun to be had. Talking of, where can we find more about your work, Sky? Where can we follow you and keep up to date with what you're up to?
Yeah, so my main website, you could see all mostly my fine artwork and get to know about me, skynicholas.com. But you could reach me directly. Everybody in the NFT space is on Twitter, so follow my Twitter at skynicholas. And I don't normally do posts on Instagram, but I do Instagram stories, so I do have Instagram at skynicholas. And yeah, so I'll see everyone on Twitter, and probably bump into everyone on CryptoVoxels once in a while. And I really hope to reach out, and if you guys need help with anything, my DMs are always open. And I'm looking forward to basically interacting with everyone listening to this podcast. And thank you so much for having me. This has been such a pleasure. And I've enjoyed this conversation very much.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much. Likewise, it's been brilliant. I've absolutely loved it. And thank you for all the value and everything you've talked to us about. It's been amazing. So I'll add all those links in the show notes as well. So make sure you click through there to check out Sky's work. But thanks so much for coming on. I've loved it.
Thank you, Luke.